birthday as you celebrate.
Thank you very much, Amy.
Dr. Angela Davis, the scholar and human rights activist, professor emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz, author of many books, including Freedom is a Constant Struggle, Ferguson, Palestine, and the Foundations of a Movement. For more than four decades, Dr. Davis has been one of the most influential activists and intellectuals in the United States, an icon of the Black Liberation Movement. Last Friday, the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute rescinded a human rights award for her and canceled its February 16th gala altogether. But Dr. Davis still plans to go to Birmingham, her hometown, on that date for an alternative event organized by members of the community who are outraged by the Institute's decision. Visit democracynow.org to see our hour-long special with Angela Davis, where she talks about how Aretha Franklin once offered to post bail for her and much more. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 5 o'clock, and coming up next is your evening news.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This organization has the power to change people's lives and the direction of their lives. And it's not just about making sure you have food on your table. It's making you feel good about who you are.
To learn how the synergy of hardworking gleaners combined with the support and assistance from Lynn Benton Food Share changes lives, come on over to Local Folks Podcast. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, list of programs, podcast, web only.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Hopworks Urban Brewery, offering sustainable brews and local food for 10 years, serving the community at three locations: Hopworks Urban Brewery on Southeast Powell Boulevard, Bike Bar at North Williams Avenue, and in Vancouver on Southeast Mill Plain Boulevard. More information is available online at hopworksbeer.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Eugene police kill man at middle school, government shutdown and its effects on Oregon, and in international news, security officers in Sudan fire live bullets in hospital. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 11th, 2019. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Rachel Hartley. As we roll into the fourth week of Trump's government shutdown, federal employees aren't the only ones feeling the pinch. Oregon's most vulnerable citizens could start paying a high price as many domestic violence shelters and supplemental food programs in Oregon, which depend on federal funds, may soon face cuts to funding. Even if calls for assistance from the domestic violence shelters were answered, it's unclear if the money, which comes in the form of reimbursement for past expenses, would be available for immediate use. In addition, the continued shutdown is also affecting those who rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as food stamps. That program is administered by the U.S. Department of Agricultural and overseen by the Oregon Department of Human Services. If the government shutdown continues, people with Oregon Trail cards could feel an impact as soon as the 1st of February. In addition, the Department of Agriculture may start disconnecting stores from the food stamp network because of a lack of staffing to carry out reviews. If the shutdown continues, Oregonians can expect that more stores will become disconnected and be unable to accept food stamps.
Meanwhile, in Washington, the impasse between Senate Democrats and Republican backers of Trump shows no sign of letting up. Federal workers rallied outside the White House today, pointing out the impact of lost wages on their families and the national economy. Meanwhile, the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee announced their intention to proceed to nomination hearings for Andrew Wheeler, acting head of the Environmental Protection Agency. That's despite the government shutdown. Senate Democrats have vowed to block any measure that does not reopen the government immediately. The group Earth Justice called the move a slap in the face to the millions of people suffering from this misguided impasse. The group pointed out that federal workers and their families are struggling to pay their bills and stay in their homes. Millions of people are on the brink of losing the food assistance that stands between their families and starvation. Instead of addressing that crisis, the group notes that the Trump administration is intent on spending the EPA's resources to elevate a former coal lobbyist to a six-figure taxpayer-funded job. Earth Justice called this action a disgrace, even by the standards of an administration accustomed to it.
In Eugene this morning, a man was shot and killed at the Cascade Middle School. The shooting took place about 10:30 a.m. while students were in class. Eugene police say that they came to the school because of what they called a, and quote, custodial dispute. But it was unclear if that means the person was shot was a parent of a student at the school. According to police, when they arrived on school grounds, they tried to escort the man off the school property, but they claimed that he pulled out a weapon and they shot him. Neighbors reported hearing at least five shots. Police did not say what kind of a weapon the man allegedly had in his possession, nor have they identified him. The students were put on lockdown and locked into their classrooms, and parents were unable to retrieve their children from the school until 3 p.m. No students, faculty, or police were injured. We will follow up with this report on Monday's news with more information on what exactly happened at Cascade Middle School this morning that left one man dead at the hands of Eugene police.
The Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing, PCCEP, will begin regular meetings on Wednesday, January 30th. That first meeting will be held from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. and will also include a town hall co-hosted with the city's compliance officer and community liaison. The location of the meeting will be at Warner Pacific University in the McGuire Auditorium. The agenda and other important details will be available on the PCCEP website that can be found at portlandoregon.gov. The PCCEP is the latest version of a community advisory committee to oversee the police. This committee is made up of 13 Portlanders, including two youth members who were selected after an outreach effort that city officials say focused on removing barriers to participation for historically marginalized communities. The KBOO News team will be on location at the January 30th meeting to stand with the marginalized communities against the supremacy of policing. This committee replaces the Community Oversight Advisory Board, which a federal judge determined did not provide proper oversight of Portland police. The Portland Police Department has been under a court order since 2012 to improve its methods for dealing with people in mental health crises.
Corvallis police said today they are continuing an investigation into a street fight that broke out between white supremacists and a group of transgender women and Veterans for Peace in December. A week before the street fight, Marr had tweeted, quote, "If like James Fields, you find your car surrounded by murderous anti-white mob, do not try to escape. Try to maximize your body count," end quote. This was a reference to the man who murdered anti-racist activist Heather Heyer in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017 by plowing his car through a group of demonstrators. Marr made that tweet just 3 days before Fields was sentenced to life in prison for killing Heather Heyer and injuring a number of other protesters. 5 days after that, Marr was out on the streets of Corvallis with his infamous swastika-painted van covered in anti-Semitic slurs. Marr showed up with his racist van at a peace and justice event and tried to jump onto the message of human rights activists who called for a boycott of Israeli products due to the Israeli military's violence. The white supremacist claimed that he supported the boycott, but local left-wing activists say clearly that the man was a white supremacist trying to co-opt their message.
Last night in Portland, Oregon, Physicians for Social Responsibility and the Portland No Nukes Forum held an event at Tabor Space in Northeast Portland. The event focused on nuclear weapons, nuclear power, and those impacted by nuclear destruction in Hiroshima, the Marshall Islands, and Hanford. Participants learned how a just transition to an equitable and clean energy society has no room for nuclear power or nuclear weapons. Here is featured poet Kathy Jetnell Kitchener from the Marshall Islands, which the U.S. has used as a testing ground for thousands of nuclear weapons.
So I am from the Marshall Islands, which is located in the Northern Pacific region. It's a four-hour flight from Hawaii, for those who need to place it. And the Marshall Islands is the location of over 60 nuclear weapons tests by the United States. And a lot of my work has been writing poetry and raising awareness on that nuclear legacy and using my poetry just to kind of get more people aware of it. And so the poem that I was going to share with you all is my more recent poem that I wrote this past summer for, it's about Runedome, which is actually the site of, so that's actually going to be my topic at my station. So I guess I'm giving myself a little bit more extra time to talk beyond what I'm given. So Eniwetok Atoll is the name of the atoll that the testing took place besides Biginni Atoll. So those are the two main test sites in the Marshall Islands. And on Eniwetok, they tested a bomb on one of their atolls, one of the islands called Runit. And on that island, they blasted it apart so much, they blasted it so deeply that it became a crater. It basically incinerated most of the island and it became this massive crater. And during the cleanup, they shoveled all this nuclear waste into that crater and then capped it with a concrete dome. And today, that dome is still there, this massive, huge nuclear waste site that you can see right above this island. And this past year, I sailed to that dome and performed a poem from the top of that dome as a way and created a video. And that's on social media. And so that's what this video is about, what this poem is that I'm gonna be sharing with you all. Before I went to visit the dome and wrote the poem, I had to think about what is it that I want people to know about the dome. And so I did a lot of research and I found out that most of the articles and most of the papers that was on this nuclear waste site focuses on it as a nuclear waste site. But I wanted to focus on what it was before it became a nuclear waste site. What was this land before it became completely contaminated? What was it before it was destroyed? For Marshallese people, we have a lot of legends and a lot of stories that are rooted in the land, the same way that a lot of people, indigenous people in general, do. And so before I went to Eniwetok, I interviewed a bunch of elders from that island. And then I also interviewed people on that island when I got there. And I also did a bunch of poetry workshops with the students there. And that's where I learned more stories about what the land was before it became a nuclear waste site. And what I found out was that it once was a very lush land that used to be what we called a pantry for the chiefs. So basically, certain islands, people don't live on those islands, but they go to them when food became scarce. There was also stories about, legends about sisters and all of that. Sisters who would swim to meet one another while they were pregnant, and they began the chiefly line of Eniwetok. There's a lot. And so, anyways, that's a long story, but this is that poem. And it was really just a meditation on what it was before it became a nuclear waste site. And it became, as I got closer and closer to getting to the dome, what I realized was it almost felt like I was meeting an elder. When I finally got to the dome, it was as if I was meeting someone who was sick and dying, because that's exactly what this island was. And it really transformed, writing this poem really transformed how I looked at land in general. So yeah, this is called Anointed. I'm coming to meet you. I'm coming to see you. What stories will I find? Will I find an island or a tomb? To get to this tomb, take a canoe. Take a canoe through miles of scattered sun, swallow endless swirling sea, gulp down radioactive lagoon. Do not bring flowers or speeches. There will be no white stones to scatter around this grave. There will be no songs to sing. How shall we remember you? You were a whole island once. You were breadfruit trees heavy with green globes of fruit whispering promises of massive canoes. Crabs dusted with white sand scuttled through pandanus roots. Beneath looming coconut trees, beds of ripe watermelon slept still, swollen with juice. And you were protected by powerful Iroj chiefs birthed from women who could swim pregnant for miles beneath a full moon. Then you became testing ground. 9 nuclear weapons consumed you one by one by one, engulfed in an inferno of blazing heat. You became crater, an empty belly. Plutonium ground into a concrete slurry filled your hollow cavern. You became tomb. You became concrete shell. You became solidified history, immovable, unforgettable. You were a whole island once. Who remembers you beyond your death? Who would have us forget that you were once green globes of fruit, pandanus roots, and whispers of canoes? Who knows the stories of the life you led before? There's a story of a turtle goddess. She gifted one of her sons, Ledao, a piece of her shell anointed with power, a leathery green fragment hollow as a piece of bark. It gave Ledao the power to transform into anything, into trees and houses, the shapes of other men, even kindling for the first fire. He almost burned us alive. I am looking for more stories. I look and I look. There must be more to this than incinerated trees, a cracked dome, a rising sea, a leaking nuclear waste with no fence. There must be more than a concrete shell that houses death. Here is a legend of a shell, anointed with power. Ledao used this shell to turn himself into kindling for the first fire. He gave this fire to a small boy. The boy almost burned his entire village to the ground. Licks of fire leapt from strands of coconut leaves, from skin and bone. While the boy cried, Ledao laughed and laughed. Here is a story of a people on fire. We pretend it is not burning all of us. Here is a story of the ways we've been tricked, of the lies we've been told. It's not radioactive anymore. Your illnesses are normal. You're fine. You're fine. My belly is a crater empty of stories and answers, only questions hard as concrete. Who gave them this power? Who anointed them with the power to burn? Thank you.
That was poet Kathy Gentnell-Kijiner from the Marshall Islands, speaking last night in Portland. More information on the anti-nuclear movement in Oregon can be found at the website OregonPSR.org.
Continuation of the investigation into the neo-Nazi brawl in Corvallis. Some of the activists got into a shouting fight, then a shoving match, with the white supremacist Jim Marr, Landing Marr, in the hospital. 4 anti-racist activists, including 3 trans women, were arrested, and a legal defense fund was set up for them. The Benton County District Attorney had to recuse himself from the case because of a conflict of interest. It is unclear at this point what the conflict of interest is. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report. At 6, it's Bread and Roses with your host, Rachel Hartley, where she will discuss topics pertaining specifically to Black feminism. Then at 7, The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 38 degrees, winds at 10 to 15 mph. Tomorrow's weather will be partly cloudy with a good chance of sunshine, with a high around 50 degrees and a low of 37 degrees. Today in history marks the 70th anniversary of the day that the cornerstone of the Islamic Center was laid in Washington, D.C. More than 6,000 people in the D.C. area from 75 different countries attended prayers there each Friday. Center offers services such as officiating marriage ceremonies, counseling those in need, providing a research center with an extensive library, and organizing language and religious classes for both children and adults. The quote of the day is, and quote, "Buried deep within you, beneath all the years of pain and anger, there is something that has never been nurtured, the potential to make yourself a better man, and that is what it is to be human, to make yourself more than you are. There was a time you looked at the stars and dreamed of what might be, end quote, from Captain Juan Luke Packard.
In a win for animal welfare advocates and for anyone who cares about the conditions of our food animals, a federal court in Iowa has ruled that the state's ag gag law is unconstitutional. Ag gag laws, as they are known, exist in many states and essentially prevent journalists and animal welfare activists from blowing the whistle on animal cruelty, neglect, and unlawful living conditions in industrial agriculture facilities. They suppress and criminalize speech about those conditions. In overturning the law, the court ruled that it infringed on First Amendment rights based on the fact that protecting the interests of agribusiness in the state don't outweigh speech protections under the First Amendment. These types of ag gag laws currently exist now in 6 states. Previously, federal courts in Idaho and Utah also found the laws to be in violation of free speech rights, and similar laws in Kansas and North Carolina are facing legal challenges. It's worth noting that in a poll conducted by the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, 94% of general American people agreed that, quote, from every step of their lives on a farm, from birth to slaughter, farm animals should be treated in a way that inflicts the least amount of pain and suffering possible.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The chairman of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe wants the state of South Dakota to share data and prosecute those who commit violent acts against Native women. Rodney Bordeaux addressed the issue in his speech to state lawmakers Thursday. Lee Strubinger reports.
According to Native Women's Wilderness, the number of known missing and murdered Native American women incidents in 2016 was 5,712. 84% of Native women experience violence in their lifetime. Rosebud Chairman Rodney Bordeaux is urging South Dakota's newly elected Governor Kristi Noem and the state legislature to work with tribes to address the problem. Bordeaux says he wants to draw the legislature's attention to the issue.
Just so that they know that this is happening and if they can help us to stop this, you know, because a lot of these guys get away with it and start prosecuting some of these people that they know that have done it. And maybe we can put a stop to this because a lot of those women, you know, they're young, some of them may be mothers and, you know, they leave kids behind or they leave family members behind that are missing them. And we just want to bring light to that. It's a big, huge problem.
During Bordeaux's State of the Tribes address, he also talked about issues of suicide, meth, and expanding Medicaid coverage. South Dakota is one of the few states that has yet to expand Medicaid for the working poor. I'm Lee Strupinger in Pierre, South Dakota.
In Montana, members of the Native community want faster response when Native women go missing. This week, a march was held in Lame Deer on what would have been Henny Scott's 15th birthday. Her body was found in December on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. Kayla DeRoche has more.
Marchers ring bells and holler. One bangs on a metal bowl. And people wear red to represent Scott and Native American girls like her who have gone missing. Organizer Dean Wallowing Bull says one thing they want is a faster response from law enforcement when members of the community report someone missing. And if they can't have that, he says they'll organize and do it themselves.
I see like a community Facebook page created with volunteers that will spread out and knock on doors and visit with friends and visit with associates and the last known hangout places of where they were, the missing people, and each time someone goes missing, we start looking for them within 24 hours.
Charlene Sleeper, who's Southern Cheyenne, Arapaho, and Crow, says she drove from Billings to take part.
For me personally, it's because this issue is intertribal and it needs to be addressed on an intertribal basis. We need to be working between all tribes to address all of the issues that contribute to missing and murdered Indigenous people.
Organizer Dean Walling Bull says this is the second of 4 planned marches to keep up the level of awareness about missing Indigenous people and about Henny Scott. He says one will be scheduled for when it gets warmer. However, Wednesday was special because it would have been Scott's 15th birthday. To honor her, marchers stop near the street leading up to her neighborhood and sing.
Happy birthday to you.
Walling Bull says the next march is tentatively set for Valentine's Day. For National Native News, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Native women advocates are expressing concern over the case of a woman in a vegetative state who gave birth to a baby at a Phoenix, Arizona care facility. The San Carlos Apache tribe confirmed this week the woman is enrolled in the tribe. The Coalition to Stop Violence Against Native Women says Native women across the U.S. experience high rates of violence, adding those with disabilities are vulnerable to sexual assault. The group says the incident is drawing attention to the need for families and tribes to check on safety records of facilities caring for their relatives. An investigation is underway at Hacienda Healthcare, where the 29-year-old gave birth in December. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The federal government announced today that they have now transferred and removed all children from the Tornillo Detention Center for Undocumented Migrant Youths in Texas. This ends more than a half year of operation for a facility that critics challenged as, quote, Tent City. It served as a symbol of President Donald Trump's hardline approach to immigration. The government says that all unaccompanied children sheltered at Tornillo have now been either released to sponsors or transferred to other shelters. Amnesty International issued a statement that warehousing thousands of children in tents for weeks and months on end has been one of the most dangerous and disastrous policies of the Trump administration. The group welcomes the closure of the children's detention camp in Tornillo and will hold the government to account in its assurance that the majority of the children will be moved to loving homes. But, they added, the Trump administration's policies of cruelty must stop. The policy of deliberately slowing the asylum process to a trickle must stop. The stigmatization of asylum seekers must stop. Detaining some families indefinitely while leaving others vulnerable to danger while they remain in Mexico must stop. The U.S. government, according to Amnesty International, must take steps to fulfill its obligation to those seeking asylum and rectify the crisis of its own making.
Today, a Palestinian woman was shot and killed by Israeli forces near the border wall with Israel during the Great March of Return protests in the Gaza Strip. Palestinians have been protesting since March of 2018, a part of ongoing mass demonstrations against the Israeli occupation of Palestine. They are also demanding the activation of Palestinian refugee rights of return. So far, Israeli forces have killed at least 210 Palestinians and wounded over 18,000 people during the protests at the border. No Israelis have been killed or wounded by Palestinians participating in the Great Return March protests. Consortium News held an online vigil for the imprisoned journalist Julian Assange this afternoon. Assange is a wanted man because he published classified information that revealed the crimes and corruption around the world, not just in the United States, but it is the U.S., the supposed beacon of freedom and democracy, that has indicted him and wants him extradited to the United States for the crime of publishing. That's why Julian Assange has been a refugee in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for the past 6 years. He knows that the second he steps back onto British territory, he will be arrested and sent to the U.S. Assange believes that in the U.S., he is unlikely to receive a fair trial and would likely spend the rest of his life in prison. Journalist Cassandra Fairbanks visited Julian Assange last Monday. Here's a clip of her speaking at today's event.
They scan you with a metal detector when you go in and search your bags, which didn't really bother me because Julian has a lot of enemies and I'd rather that they be doing that. But then once I was inside, the amount of cameras and microphones was, I mean, it had to have been double or triple what it was last year. No matter where you're standing, no matter where you are, there's a camera picking you up. And from pretty much every angle also, which was a little bit dystopian and creepy. We tried to go into another room to get some privacy so that we could speak freely, and they came and pounded on the door and they were like, no, you have to go back. So we ended up in the conference room and we tried to put on like the radio and a white noise machine, but it was so obvious that we were being recorded that we ended up just passing notes, which is a little bit insane to me. Around DC, there's been a lot of talk about how it's Pence, and that Pence and Pompeo have been really adamant about getting Julian. and that it hasn't been like so much the like Trump and his people, but Pence. Although I think that's kind of just passing the buck, but that's been the most of the talk I've heard around here. And I think Ecuador has some debts and they're looking for a bailout. And the U.S. said, you know, if you don't go after Chevron and you hand us Julian Assange, then we'll be more willing to play ball.
Yeah.
And I think that they want that money, and that they don't, the new president doesn't particularly care about Julian Assange. He doesn't care about press freedom the way that their previous president did. And so I think he's willing to make a deal with the devil.
That was Cassandra Fairbanks talking about her visit last week with Julian Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy in London.
The political unrest in Sudan continues to grow as protesters call for the resignation of long-term President Omar al-Bashir. Today, government security officers allegedly fired shots in a hospital where injured protesters were recovering. The civil unrest began several weeks ago when people gathered in Khartoum to protest the government, the rising prices of bread, oil, and high cost of living. Since then, there have been over 300 protests across Sudan. Each protest has been met with brutal violence from Sudanese forces, including tear gas, rubber bullets, and live ammunition. On Thursday, three more activists were murdered by police during a protest. Later that day, Sudanese security officers entered a hospital where they fired live bullets at patients and staff as they were seeking and giving medical attention to protesters. Sudanese authorities claim 8 protesters have been killed, but Amnesty International has put the death toll at 37. Currently, Amnesty International is calling for immediate release of human rights defender Yasser Ali, 57. Ali was taken by the Sudanese National Intelligence Agency on January 5th from the hospital. He had been hospitalized with serious injuries when police attacked a protest in Khartoum. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 11th, 2019. Here are the main points.